Hi, Irene Kelly.
Hey, good morning, Craig. How's it going?
So glad to catch up with you in Raleigh, North Carolina.
I know, right?
Here's the world of bluegrass. Can you reflect a second on this event? And I always ask people sort of, you know, how many years it's been a part of their life and what kind of part of their life it is.
Wow, it's a big part of my life. I've been coming to IBMA since it was back at the Galt House in Louisville. Mm-hmm. My first time I went as Claire Lynch's date, and had a great time and just watched it grow, and it moved from there to, I believe it was Nashville, and then here we are in Raleigh.
Yep. What role does it serve? What works about it?
I think it's mostly about networking, about putting the names and faces together, because we all, you know, especially now that we're all on the computer, mm-hmm. we all get to communicate that way, and we forget that there's an actual person behind that, and this way we can actually put everybody together, and I really enjoy that.
Well, it's nice to catch up with you again. An occasion is the Benny's TV Repair album, which came out a little earlier this year, but mm-hmm. here it is. You just handed me Bluegrass Unlimited.
Yeah.
And it did number one album.
Woohoo!
Congratulations. And
Thank you.
What does that mean to you?
A lot. Mm-hmm. That's a big thrill for me. I've been reading that magazine since the 70s, mm-hmm. and all the way through still playing country music, but always being a bluegrass fan. And, you know, I've had some success in the country market, but this is it's kind of a homecoming, and to be recognized that way and getting to have that spot. And there's my favorite guy on the front cover, Larry Sparks, and there's my name run under his name. I'm like, okay, that's awesome.
I know bluegrass has been a part of your life a long time, but did you see yourself, at what point did you see yourself and realize you were growing toward this community as the place where you'd find co-writers, outlets, the style of records you were making?
Well, you know, I started in pretty much bluegrass, so it sort of comes full circle. There was a time when I was playing the station in about once a month when I first moved to Nashville, and I signed to MCA Records, and I was told by the label, you got to stop playing there because people are going to think you're bluegrass. And I thought, well, what's wrong with that? But in the commercial country arena, that was not a good idea. Mm-hmm. And so, what I did was just stop using the banjo, and I continued to play for a while, and then eventually did stop playing the station in, which I really missed that, you know, and sort of picked up country gigs and songwriter nights to fill that void. But, you know, even when I cut my country record on MCA, Marshall Morgan produced it, and it was really important to me that the heart and soul of it be bluegrass.
Yeah.
So I insisted on having Carl Jackson play acoustic guitar and Sam Bush on mandolin,
right.
and Mark O'Connor on the fiddle, and Claire Lynch sang harmony, you know, and Waylon Patton and Kathy Chiavola, and like, all these grassers that I was hanging out with, and they were very much a part of the record, and a lot of people on Music Row didn't know who they were yet,
yeah.
so...
and that, some of them never did.
Well, yeah, but now, well, Mark became a huge in-demand session player.
So, right, that was on the front end of Mark's huge session career.
Right,
I see.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep, so that's kind of the story there. And, top 40 country now is so different. It's, I don't know that I could write a song for it if I have that in my wheelhouse to do that style, you know.
Yeah.
So... I feel like bluegrass is the last frontier of the traditional sound. So here I am.
A lot of
folks
do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes I wonder if it didn't work out for the best. I mean, it could have been because there was not a place where it was naturally marketed by commercial forces, bluegrass music and sort of old soul country. It had to create its own environments, its own universe, its own marketplace, its own network of festivals, its own business ecosystem.
Yep.
And you get this, what we see here, very mature at 30 plus years old, and the Americana scene, 20 years old, both really robust and having great success and commercial success, not having to pick up anybody's table scraps, but doing really great stuff. And in a way, it's almost nicer that Country Music Row didn't dabble in bluegrass and give it just enough rope to string itself along without really servicing. Because here,
right.
the real fans and the real musicians get to meet each other.
Well, that's so true. And we're just trying to keep that intact in that way. And everybody is so accessible as well. I did a panel yesterday, songwriter workshop, and you know, was able to talk to the folks afterwards. And there's really people out there that still want to do that. They still want to reach out and talk about the process and what's going on. And, and there was a time where you could do that in country music. You could go up to somebody's booth at what they called fanfare at the fairgrounds and have those conversations. But no one's accessible anymore. So that's kind of what's going on with bluegrass also. And there's a lot of grassroots things still going on. Everybody's making their own stuff, you know, running out, making their posters at Staples. That was me yesterday afternoon, by the way.
Gotta do it.
You know, we're still doing stuff like that.
Well, on the subject of killer musicians and sidemen, the personnel on this new record, Benny's TV Repair, is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Stuart Duncan's on there and Brian Sutton. Talk about the process of pulling this cadre together and what led to the record.
Well, this is the third record that I did with this cast of musicians,
wow.
Minus the banjo player. This time we had Matt Menefee, because Matt had been spending a lot of time with me, about 2 years there, playing with me on the road. He became very much part of my sound, so we had Matt come play on the record. And the constant was Mark Fain. Mark produced the first two records, and then this one he arranged the music, and then I took it over after that and finished up the vocals. He got real busy on another project, so there's been that constant. And the songwriters on this record are probably a little bit different cast of characters. Some of the background vocals are the same. Justina, my daughter, is doing a lot of the vocals. Dale Ann Bradley, of course. And we've got Brooke and Darren on this. That's something new.
Brooke and Darren Aldridge.
So, yep.
You know, rocketing forward now on Rounder Records. And
yep.
Good to see them, you know, realize their potential that they showed, you know, 10 years ago coming out of Shelby area. Cool.
Right. Yeah, they're becoming Grand Ole Opry stars now. So that's kind of what how the process has been going. But it's always about the song. You know, I write these songs, and this record, though, Benny's TV Repair, is probably the most personal one yet. Every song on there is about some personal experience, either a story in my life that I've expounded on, like Cabbage Head, who was a kid in my mom's hometown who got picked on, and we decided to change his story and make him a hero, because he was not a hero, and he was not treated well. So they're all based on, you know, personal things. My dad had the TV repair shop.
Well, that's the one that jumped out at me, and the part of what I heard in the undertone was the notion that we don't get things repaired anymore.
Nope, we throw them out.
You know, we can't fix that. It's got a computer in it, throws it away.
Right. Can you believe that?
Mm-hmm.
I know. And that's what my dad did. He sent away for that course. It took him 2 years to do the correspondence. By the time he got the pamphlets back and forth and took the quizzes and waited on that. It took 2 years. He got a certificate, and then he was certified, and we had a sign made for him, and he was so proud of that. So that hung up in his shop. But while he's working, he's playing the radio, and he's playing the AM radio, and I'm listening to country music, and it's, you know, permeating through the floor and in my consciousness, and that converted me into a country music fan, and then later a singer and songwriter of it.
Why did your dad take that path? What does it say about your family and him and his character and what was going on in his life that he would take that route as a professional person?
Well, he was a fix-it guy. He could fix anything, and he wanted to fix everything. Like, what do you got there? Let me see that. I'll fix that. You know, whatever it was. My friend pulls up, your tires are low, come, you know, pull in the driveway, let me put some air in them. That was my dad. And so I think at some point he had mastered everything, and he was like, and then his brother was also a TV repairman, so he thought, well, that looks really cool. I want to do that. So he did, and he sent away for the tube testers and the scopes and all that stuff. So he had all the equipment. I mean, it was the real deal in that basement.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Yeah.
What a nice way to make a living.
Yeah, it was. It was really cool. We always had a great TV set that worked.
Yeah, I guess so. Tell me about the role your daughter Justina plays on this. She seems, for a while she lived overseas and you didn't get make music with her as much.
That's right.
But in some of the clips, she's right there, you know, rocking the Pro Tools rig. So tell me about
her
role
amazing.
In your life.
She's been great. Yeah, she lived in Paris for 5 years. She had an artist visa and was a working actress and performer and came back home. She's, you know, she was done with that part of her life and still has ties there and great friends that come to visit us and we have a place to go. But she was ready to come back and start her career in Nashville in the States. Mm-hmm. And so she got with Eddie Gore at RCA Studio B, and they have a production company, and she also owns her own Pro Tools rig, and so she's a really good engineer. And she basically lined every single vocal on this record, tuned every single vocal, recorded a lot of the background vocals, and sang a lot of the background vocals. And it was just great, you know. And she's a really good singer, and she's got really excellent pitch.
Yeah.
So she knows how to tune something to where it doesn't sound like it's been tuned, or it's tuned to the wrong note, which some people can do that. If they don't know the song, I can understand that they wouldn't hear where it would go when a note is in question, you know, on a vocal. But Jessie knows exactly where to stick it and make it work and just sound natural. So she's been a huge help, and she's really enjoying that too. That's becoming a really great career for her right now. As well as her own, you know, she's got a band now. They do international music. They just did a festival where she sang 9 songs in Portuguese.
Okay.
She sang 9, and she learned them in 5 days.
Whoa, man. Yeah.
Yeah. She just sat there with Google Translate and all this stuff and learned to speak it phonetically, and then she went behind that and learned what the meaning of the words were.
Right.
She just has a natural.
Is there anything about your records have this very comfortable aesthetic? I mean, they're natural and listenable, and they suit your voice, which has this, you know, really unguarded, beautiful, plain tone. And it's so I'm curious if as these years have gone by and you hear so much stuff, you know, at a convention like this, all the varieties of the way people approach this broad umbrella of music we might call bluegrass.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you're happily set in your ways? Do you try to experiment with things and then go, you know, this is not me? Or maybe there's more experimenting going on than meets the ear to us.
Well, I don't do too much experimenting, because by now I think I know what my limitations are. You know, I really do. And I can hear a voice like Celine Dion and really admire that and love it, but know that, nope, this voice is not going to hit those notes like that. So I don't even try. But I guess, and being a songwriter too, I can write for my own voice, so that's really helpful. And probably stay in that lane.
Right. Well, there is a wild presence here that I wanted to ask about. Let's hold to the end. But Steve Cropper's on this project.
Yep.
What's the story?
Well, that was a lot of fun. So Jess has been hanging out at RCA Studio, and Eddie Gore is there with, and he's one of Steve's best friends. And Steve has a room there. He rents the room right next to him, and they work together a lot, and Steve goes in and records. And he's always hanging out, and we're always at social functions together. And he's just a really warm person, and he seemed to really take a liking to Jess. You know, they became fast friends. And I said, Jess, let's see if Steve would maybe be interested in writing with us. Why not? You know, I think that would be great fun. If not, we just say, hey, we tried, and no big deal. So she asked him, and he was like, yes, when?
No.
That's great. Let's do it. So we met at RCA. Steve brought his Les Paul, never took it out of the case.
Okay. I was going to ask if he had a guitar.
He did.
Yeah.
And I had a melody and the line, anything to help you say goodbye, and I started playing the chorus. And Steve just started spouting out lines, like, and I was like, oh my God, that's like perfect. But Jessie, before we started the session, the story goes that she said, Steve, you know, Mom's working on a bluegrass record, so let's try to write something for that. And Steve says, well, I don't really have any bluegrass chops, but I have bluegrass thoughts. That was classic Steve.
Perfect.
Yeah. So that's kind of how the session started out, and that's exactly what he did. He was just, like, lyrically on it. Nice. And, you know.
And if my memory serves in his life history, that in the day, the songs that he was really contributed to, lyrics weren't the thing he led with. That he was sort of more the musical person in the pairings.
That's and true.
Maybe he's really letting the words flow now more.
Well,
than
I'm
ever.
Telling you, he was putting them together, and now I was just knocked out.
Mm-hmm.
He did play on the record, though. He's playing.
There's some right. There's electric guitar back there.
Yep, mm-hmm. He sure is. And if you notice, Steve's style is so distinctive. He never plays the melody of the song. If you listen to that,
right.
He's playing Steve Cropper licks,
yeah.
But they fit. They fit perfectly in the song.
Yeah, he makes a musical sort of setting and space,
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yep.
And mood.
He sure does.
Great. Well,
yep.
Congrats again on the success
of
the record, and glad to see you continuing to, you know, do what you do.
Thank you. I'm really enjoying it, and I appreciate everybody's support, and the response to the record really means a lot to me. So thank you. Thanks for having me.